Why, what's this?
Greece? Italy? Spain?
But we always got a bugger.
Yeah, I thought we'd have a change this year.
Yeah, but we've always been to Bognor.
Well, it's about time we stopped going to Bognor, isn't it?
Well, what have you got against Bognor?
I've got nothing against Bognor. It's a nice place. I just don't want to go to Bognor this year.
It's lovely there. The Hotham Park, Peck's Corner. I bet there's none of this in these places.
P-A-C-A-C-I-O-N.
Absolutely nobody I knew had ever been bored, except my father and one or two like him who told me war stories about 1914, and of course nobody wanted to know about that. I mean, they were foreign parts, they were rather like the moon might be to us now, I suppose.
We're on vacation, and the world is ours.
60 years ago, Harry Chandler caught the travel bug and started organising his own cheap tours of Switzerland and Germany. He was a rarity. The horizons of most of his fellow citizens stopped at Brighton. In 1939, Chandler found a bigger tour operator had crashed the market, Adolf Hitler. His activities meant that, come 1945, there was a surplus of planes and pilots in a devastated Europe. Enter another dictator. Stalin's Berlin blockade gave temporary employment to British pilots flying into the city. But what were they to do next? The eventual answer was back in London, with Vladimir Reitz, who was working for Reuters news agency.
One day, I was told that some Russian friends of mine in Paris had started a holiday camp in the island of Corsica, a place called Calvi. And they said to me, why don't you try and get us some British clients to come to our tented camp? So I went there, and it was an absolutely delightful, idyllic spot. And I thought that it would make a terrific holiday. I came back. I made inquiries. I left my job at Reuters, started a company called Horizon Holidays, and that's how inclusive air tour charters began.
On the 20th of May 1950, Vladimir Reitz created a magic moment by putting together plane and package.
The holiday was relatively cheap by the standards of 40 years ago. We were able to give people a two-week holiday under canvas, mind you, but still, with all meals and as much wine as they could drink for 2 weeks, including the flight, for £32.10, which is £32.50. But actually, you know, if you translate that into terms of today, it's not all that cheap, you know, if you allow for inflation. On the other hand, a scheduled service flight to Nice by British European Airways in those days was about £70. So we were able to give people a two-week holiday in Corsica, slightly further than Nice, and all their accommodation, all their food, all their wine, for about half the airfare.
There had been sporadic forays into the air for the well-off before that, but traditional holiday companies like Thomas Cook looked to the world from train and coach windows. It was more like travel than tourism.
Forget the noisy traffic and the busy pavements, and relax in the safekeeping of an experienced tour director. Sample the luxury and calm of a Cook's Continental Coach Tour.
Edmund Swinglehurst was a Cook's travel courier in the days when they were changing from trains to planes.
In the 50s, it's difficult when you think back to try and remember what people were like. But I think one has to remember that although the British had been great travellers in the 19th century, it had only been a small number of the British, even so. And there probably weren't more than a million people travelling up to the beginning of the century, per year. Now, in the 50s, you suddenly got holidays with pay. Again, it's a concept that today we accept, but in those days, I mean, holidays with pay were really quite an exception. And suddenly, after the war, everybody had holidays with pay. So there were 29 million working people who had 2 weeks and money in their pocket. So they created a great new market for travel. And then, of course, Britain, austerity Britain, you know, there was rationing and so on. People were very eager to go to places like Switzerland and southern France where there was no rationing.
This sea is Arab, Turkish, Spanish, Balkan, Greek, Italian, French. Its shores are a lodestar, pulling towards it the outer world. Man was cradled here, and it is to here that men return to be refreshed on its magic coast. The Riviera.
Ah, whatever happened to the Riviera? Well, the beaches of F. Scott Fitzgerald were encased in concrete and renamed the Riviera. Meanwhile, Swinglehurst was exploring the idyllic fishing villages of southern Spain.
I started by going to the Costa Brava, which was the first Costa to open. And it was very unspoiled then. People stayed in hotels which had been there since the Edwardian period. And they weren't very good. The plumbing would always break down. Wardrobes would fall on people. All sorts of hazards of that kind. And, of course, the Spaniards knew very little about cooking to British taste. So the food was always rather oily and people were rather put off by it. But at the same time, it gave people a sense of excitement. I think although they were eating octopus and things like that, which they had never even seen in their lives before, it was, it's like in most things that are new, it was an adventure.
Do you know what you always say when I say, Senora, you must have the Spanish paella, the octopus, it is so wonderful. You say, oh, dear me, I would not like that. And then after 1 week, you say, this is a better paella than yesterday. Back home in Hampstead, we must buy from the fishman the octopus.
People were very uncomplaining, actually, in those days. Whatever happened, they'd laugh it off. Perhaps it was the aftermath of the war. People had been used to not complaining. They did all sorts of adventurous and exciting things that they hadn't done before.
Take my hand, I'm a stranger in paradise.
One of the prophets leading them into this wonderland was Harold Bamberg, a former Berlin blockade pilot.
They were apprehensive. And, we used to dish out sweets so they could suck something because the airplanes weren't pressurized because the descent was uncomfortable. The piston engines were noisy and the premature failure rate on engines was that it existed. Didn't have things like hijacking and bombs on board or anything like that to speak of. No, I think people were very apprehensive, but they were brave in the sense that it was a new experience for them.
The gypsy within us sends everyone travelling, rolling clip-clop at a jog trot to see the sights on this second day.
We used to do, for example, things which now sound very ordinary, but visiting wine caves. Now, British people didn't drink wine in those days, and I had arranged for them to visit a wine cave. As people didn't drink, I said to the man who ran the cave, look, it won't cost very much money because they won't drink much of your wine. And so we agreed on a very small fee for the excursion. I think it was about £1 a head. But when the people got into the wine cave, and we had people with guitars and music and, gypsy dancing and all this sort of thing, and then somehow or other the mood got into them, and they began to drink quite a lot of wine for the first time. I remember the second week we did this, and the proprietor of the cave said to me, I'm losing money on this. Your people drink. You thought they wouldn't drink, but they do drink. And then there was also the adventure of meeting people like the Spanish police or the Franco police. They were very strict on bathing costumes at the time. And you couldn't go on the beach in a bikini. And in fact, even in a proper full-length bathing costume, you were not allowed to walk on the promenade. You had to stay on the sand. And the policemen used to chase people, and threaten them if they caught them. After a while, the police started carrying bits of coloured paper in their pockets, each colour for a different language, because the police didn't know what language the tourists spoke. So they used to say German, then they'd give them a yellow bit of paper, a British red bit of paper, and they'd say, you are not allowed to walk on the promenade in your bathing costume.
Visitors from far afield are welcomed by hosts who know the importance of their guests, hosts who have made a science of catering for the needs of the traveller.
Away from puritanical fascist police was the knotty land of the tourist promos and the reality of an isolated, peasant-dominated Spain observing the new arrivals.
When I get tired and feeling blue, I think of all the things I can do in summer. In summer.
Universal Tours 1963. Take a 15-day air holiday direct from Manchester in a fully pressurized DC-6 aircraft. Lorette de Mar, a peaceful village, its houses painted snowy white, set in a background of pine trees, cork woods and cypresses, Lorette has countless secluded sandy bays and coves. The atmosphere of the place is typically Catalonian.
Yes, but not for long. From the mid-50s, currency exchange controls were being relaxed. That and the rise in living standards wrapped more packages. And by the turn of the 60s, 1 million of us were flying south. Doug Goodman, travel consultant.
Probably 30 years ago, about 1 million people took a package tour. And today, that number go to Benidorm alone. So it has grown dramatically. When you actually compare the price of a holiday of, say, the early 60s to somewhere like Benidorm, which is the most popular destination, you'd see 2 weeks at something like 36 guineas, and it took you about 10 hours to get there. The plane had to stop several times. You'd have to fly into Valencia and then have a long, slow journey along not very good roads into that resort, which hardly existed then. And nowadays, you can fly, and I did it last week, door to door, that's London to Benidorm, in 4.5 hours. And you can have a holiday there next winter, 3 nights for £120. And in fact, if you are a pensioner and you can spare 70 nights this winter, you can go there for £387, which works out at £5.52 per day, all in.
What was Benidorm like in 1960?
Behind you on my wall, there is a picture of a tiny fishing village, as it was in 1920, with just a few huts on the wall. You can see the same location in 1962, with a fairly empty beach and one or two, three or four high-rise, as they were then, hotels. But now it is a very lively, very busy resort, full of skyscrapers, catering for the needs of just about every type of holidaymaker.
30 years ago, it was a wonderful, exotic and pleasant village. Now, as you say, it's full of skyscrapers. The people of Benidorm benefited?
People in Benidorm have benefited phenomenally because, of course, there are now a lot of very rich people there. And there's quite an interesting story attaching to that. The sons of a family inherited the land. When father died, the land was split up amongst the sons. And the eldest son got the best plot of most fertile farming land right on down. And the youngest son always got the bit of cheap scrub land, the sandy bit, alongside the beach. Now they're the guys who are laughing all the way to the bank because it's their land that has been developed.
The eldest son, meanwhile, was probably running the local conservation group as the packages burst open along the coffers. In charge of delivery and direction were the couriers.
The idea of the information meeting is to give you information on the hotel, the resort, some do's and don'ts, and give you information on the excursion program. If you've got any problems in the hotel, then the place to report that to is the reception. If your light bulbs are blowing up in their sockets, or you're pulling the chain and getting a shower, go to reception and report it to them. Don't get into the hotel lifts wet. You're more than likely to be ricocheted to the 12th floor without the aid of the mechanism by an electric shock. Beaches. The nearest beach to the hotel, if you go across this road in front of us, go down the street that it's facing you, cross over the dual carriageway, go down again, cross over the next road. If you're not killed by the traffic, you'll fall into the Mediterranean.
Now, in modern tourism, many people who go abroad like to have entertainment and they like something to happen on their holidays. Holidays today are leisure, unlike the 19th century holiday where they were part of your education. If you travelled in the 19th century, you had to take your Baedeker and learn all about the cultural sites and all that. Modern people don't feel that way. They feel they worked hard during the year. They just want to go and have fun.
Jesus, I'm worn out. Good morning, Arthur. Oh, I can't cope with this. You know I've been at that barbecue all night, got finished at 2 o'clock in the morning, and this man says to me, he comes up and he says, been thrown out in the bus, of course, the usual. Thrown out in the bus. I gave him a polythene bag last night. You won't believe it. He chucked his teeth out the bus window. I've spent the morning running up and down that road in a taxi trying to find a set of teeth in a polythene bag.
Some younger travellers were prone to losing their teeth more painfully. Fairly or not, the young tourist is drunk phenomenon has often been laid at the hotel door of Club 1830. Times are changing there, claims Club's Paul Riches. Take the old beach party, for example.
We would take people down to a beach. We would maybe make up a bucket of sangria and they would drink as much as they liked from that bucket. And then they would tend to do various games on the beach, which would involve an egg-throwing game or a running around a pole and that type of thing, and the various games in the sea. I think over the last 3 or 4 years, we've found that the clientele has changed and the aspirations of young people now are different, and they don't really necessarily want to go on a beach and run around and make fools of themselves. So what we tended to do with, for example, a beach party, I'll quote an example I saw last week in Ibiza, is they've tended to refine that now, and they've included a lot more in the excursion. And if you went to San Antonio, for example, you would go into a small sort of cruise boat, and you would actually cruise out from the Bay of San Antonio. There'd be various champagne on board and some various soft drinks for people that want them. And it would cruise for around about an hour or so. It would pull up in a lovely little bay called Calamoli, and then there is a swimming pool area and a restaurant and a bar and some sunbeds and everything, and people would be allowed to just relax and do what they want to do. And then we would have a few sort of games around the pool, various sort of Lilo races, and then other things that we do, some diving competitions, and just things that are fairly visual but fairly easy and relaxed to do. And that would now be today's beach party.
The Sunday People, August 1985. Summertime holidays where the loving is easy for thousands of young singles have finally beaten courier Mark Walker. "It's all too hot for me," he said. "I'm afraid I won't be going back." On Corfu, there was one girl we counted having sex with 35 different guys in a fortnight. And on a French campsite, a girl managed to get off with 3 different guys on the coach before she even arrived there. The Durham lad has decided to give up his job after just 2 years. He said, "There's just too much sex to be healthy."
"Hey, son. Hey, is this for the dusty weekend?"
"This is a 4-day trip to Elsbells, if that's what you mean."
"Same difference, isn't it?"
"Have you got a ticket?"
"Certainly. I don't expect to get it for nothing. Not the holiday, anyway."
On this evening of arrival, after a moment of relaxation, none can resist the excitement of a first night's exploration. And on the Riviera, the night can be a shower of sparkling lights, a carnival, a masque, a battle fought with flowers. This is a romantic world, and the visitor is straightway pitchforked into Wonderland.
I think most the Spaniards don't particularly like the English anyway. It's because the English now have got such a...
They've got a reputation.
Reputation.
Isn't that? Put it right now.
Yeah. We just come straight out of a club. We're not causing bar.
You've been in the pub all night?
Yeah.
Yeah, just come out now.
Since 8 o'clock yesterday, last night. Yeah? I mean, I met this lad here tonight.
What was it? 12 hours ago, wasn't it?
Wasn't even that? 12 o'clock we met. He's from Yorkshire. I met a lad
from Manchester, mate.
Ah, sorry. Manchester.
It's just everything's so open. You can do what you like, when you like. You can get drunk 9 o'clock in the morning if you want, but no one moans.
We provide a flight accommodation and the services of a representative in resort. We don't dictate to young people how much they should or shouldn't drink, how much they should or shouldn't eat, who they should or shouldn't go out or do whatever with. We don't dictate that to people. So no, we don't have, I don't think we have brought any of the lager loutism on at all. And we just provide the holidays for people, and whatever the people want to do is up to them. We just try and educate them, as I said to you before, in the, you know, look, if you go to a certain bar, they will not serve you very good drinks, for example. Or if you do walk along the street holding a bottle or a glass, it is actually illegal in this country. And we just try and help people. And I think, if anything, we help towards controlling and a assisting young people not to get in trouble, because a lot of time they're misinformed, I believe, and they don't appreciate that they are breaking the law.
Vladimir Reitz invented the air package. He also had another bright idea, 1830. Is he to blame for paving over Paradise and putting up a parking lot?
Well, I suppose it, in a way, it could well be mine and my colleague's fault. That's right, yeah. Except we would have hoped that the local authorities there would have allowed the planning to proceed in a more orderly and attractive manner, which in some cases, of course, it didn't happen. Just some resorts just grew up like Topsy, you know, higgledy-piggledy.
Having brought beer and skittles to Benidorm, the travel companies turned their attentions to Corfu and points east, with varying degrees of success. Patricia Yates is the editor of Holiday Witch.
They've had their failures. If you look at Turkey, 4 or 5 years ago, that was tagged as the place to go, the new place. But many of the resorts were overdeveloped. Now, the sort of people who were going to Turkey wanted to experience the country, wanted the sort of small-scale natures of things. And when they got there and found these half-built concrete hotels, they didn't go again, and they told their friends not to go. And the market share of Turkey has just plummeted.
Yes, well, I think we should be very comfortable here.
Yeah, it'll be all right when it's finished, I suppose.
Well, I'm sure you won't allow a little thing like that to spoil your holiday.
Is there any point in going abroad to look for Surbiton by the Sea? Are we in danger of running out of foreign countries?
In many ways, you could describe tourism as a clean industry. It's not like building a car plant or an iron ore smelting plant that might be polluting the atmosphere. But on the other hand, if you look at the way countries tend to develop, because of what the tour operators are asking them to do, they tend to take Spain as their model. They tend to build high-rise concrete flats. They tend to put all the resources into that one area so that the people around, the natives around, aren't getting the same sort of level of facilities at all. It's in fact harming them. And to put tourists very much in a sort of protected environment. And what we see is people, as I say, becoming more sophisticated, actually wanting to experience the country they're going to. They don't want to be shut off. They want to go and stay in a hotel that's like the country they stay in, to eat food that comes from the country they stay in, and not being in this sort of privileged, isolated zone.
Some of today's tourists have gone back to basics. They've deserted Lorette and Air packages for the spirit of some of Cook's more adventurous 19th century tours. Tony Jones runs Encounter Overland, sending truckloads of travellers across the world.
Were we to take a trip that's due to leave here in a couple of weeks' time to go to Kathmandu, it'll be a 16-week overland project which will go down through Europe, will hug the Turkish coast, will go into the Middle East, including Syria and Jordan, and into Egypt, before carrying on across Iran with the same vehicle and into Pakistan, including the western end of the Himalaya, and we'll end up in Kathmandu.
Far away places, with strange-sounding names, far away over the sea.
There have also been absolutely horrendous stories, not all of which have come right. Not so very long ago, a group crossing Zaire decided that the waterways were a good deal more comfortable than the so-called roadways, and it's been done before, but a barge being towed up the Zaire River was available, and the plan was to crane this vehicle of ours onto the barge. Well, it went fine until the thing had got about 50 feet above the river, at which pace the hawser broke, and, you know, that should be the end of the story. Somehow or other, it wasn't. The entire vehicle was lifted out of the river, got onto the barge, which then proceeded on its way downstream, during which four or five frantic days of completely rebuilding every single working part of that vehicle. I mean, transfer boxes, motors, brake parts, the whole lot. The only thing that didn't need touching was the radiator, which was by then brimful of river water.
A practical example of people relating to their environment. The point may be where the traveller parts company with the tourist. Most people are still tourists, but over the last 10 years, former travel agent Jane Seddon has noticed some changes in their attitudes.
the majority of people said, you know, can you drink the water is always the top question, followed by, is it safe to eat the food? We used to have one lady that actually booked who took her own sandwiches for a week, you know, to actually prepare herself, you know, because she wasn't sure that they could make them the same way. And people used to take tea bags and all sorts of things. They never thought that abroad could cope with the English type of sort of requirements. One lady in particular who was working on lunchtime and rang me up and said, I'm outside Manchester Airport, what do I do next? So we took her through it. You go through the doors and you go to the check-in desk and you go, you know, and I said, have you got your ticket? She said, oh, yes. I said, well, who are you booked with? So she told me, I said, what time's your flight? So she said, 1 o'clock, and this was about 20 to 1, you know. I said, well, if you put the phone down and go in. She said, oh, I'm not going today. She said, I'm just practising for when I do.
I think I'm going up to change now. And in the meantime, Stanley, I do wish you'd do something about our room. I was cold in the night and there was no hot water. The toilet doesn't flush. That coffee is cold. Oh, and that sun is too hot.
The Papa Matthew's having a wonderful time.
People used to come in the very beginning and say, I've got £400 to spend, where do you suggest? I mean, nowadays, with the advent of the holiday programme, you know, it's the one where most travel agents sit there during January throwing a rubber brick at the television, you know, as soon as it comes on. It's made the public more aware of what is available and how to book. And now it's taken the fun out of it, really, because people come in and say, I've got this brochure, that brochure, and this one. Can you try this one first? It's cheaper. It flies on such and such a day. No more do they come in and really sort of expect you to actually work the holiday out as much.
After 40 years of packages, some people are getting bored with the wrapping paper. But how can you tire of good times? Patricia Yates.
The horror story with package holidays over the years has been that package operators have very much sold on price. It's been a real pile 'em high, sell 'em cheap job. And that has meant a decline in quality.
Hello, holiday makers. Here we are with the holiday offer of a lifetime. With Belsons, you have wined and dined on Mulligan stew and enjoyed 7 windless days in Albuquerque. But now we proudly present 14 days at Gatwick. Relax in Gatwick's delightful lounges. It's seating, it's gay muzak, it's announcements. Spend happy hours waiting for drinks at one of the many enchanting bars. Lose that oh-so tiresome luggage and enjoy the holiday of a lifetime.
It was a wonderful holiday. One could lie on one's bench and see the world go by, and one was always bumping into people, always. I shall never forget the many exciting walks. Some evenings, Ben and I would stroll along the promenade and look at Gate 8, or sometimes, if the mood was upon us, Gate 9.
There's been an enormous drop in the number of people going on package holidays, and really the industry doesn't know what to do now. And it's not that people haven't got the money to go abroad on holidays. People are still going abroad in holidays in increasing numbers. It's the package holiday that's in trouble. And we'd say it's because over the years they haven't proved to the consumer that they can give them the holiday that they want at the price they want it. And also that consumers are that little more sophisticated. They know they have a choice. If they can't rely on the tour operator, they can book things up for themselves. They can take the car and a ferry. They can ring abroad and book a hotel. There is now an alternative. And the tour operators are really being squeezed. And what's interesting is what they're tending to do is look at new countries to package, to bring that sort of excitement back of going on a package holiday to Spain. So you see Mexico and Thailand being sold in exactly the same way that Spain was sold in 10 years ago. Now, I think that what that leads to is the development of places like India, like Mexico, in exactly the same way that Spain's been overdeveloped. And in 5 and 10 years' time, perhaps sooner, consumers are going to say, that's not what we want. We don't want a holiday where we're part of the horde in a concrete resort. We want a sense of exploration, and we want to see the country itself. And already that noise is coming through.
The Riviera is many things and many places, but first and foremost, it is the beach. Mecca of youth and grace, gravitating to the Mediterranean sands. The holiday we all owe ourselves, at least once in a lifetime.